Welcome, everyone. Got that flight test music bringing us back in the studio here once again, and we are excited to be back. We had an awesome weekend. Got to hang out, actually go to the Weak Signals show in Toledo, which is probably, Wayne, one of the best shows in the country, I think, when it comes to RC aircraft and multi-rotors and everything.
Yep.
And then we got back on Sunday, and the weather for once was beautiful.
Yeah, really.
And got to drag some stuff out and do a little flying. So, well, I'll tell you what, let's dive into the show. But first of all, I do have Wayne Griffith here with us. And on the line, again, we brought back Andre Russo.
Hello, hello.
So what's going on up there in the wild north?
Hey, it's actually, it's nice out. Double digits, but windy today. It was really windy, but it's one of those things where you kind of watch the forecast now and have a plane ready to fly in the evenings, but, you know.
Right, right. So we figured, you know, we talked a little bit about the show and everything, so we could roll through it, and if you got any questions or anything, we'll discuss it and go
All right.
from there. Sound good?
That sounds like a plan.
All right. Hey, real quick, though, before I probably ought to mention, man, I've got to thank our listeners. You have just completely filled up my inbox with crash stories.
Yeah,
I mean, I have a ton of them. So I'm on the fence, Wayne. I'm not sure what to do, whether, and I guess it's kind of up to you guys out there listening. Do you want to just throw 3, 4, 5 of out, you know, per podcast, or would you like to come back and we could do an hour and a half of crash stories again? It's up to you guys. Let me know what you like, because I love to read them. I love to hear about them and dissect them and discuss them. So thank you again. I've got a ton of them, but keep sending them in. We'll log them in and we'll get through them. So thank you. All right, let's dive into the show. We had a nice long 2.5 hour drive up there. Got up there right when the doors open.
Yep.
And the cool thing with the Toledo show is not only do they have the latest and greatest, like downstairs, you walk in, I mean, everybody and anybody is there, but you go upstairs, and the whole upstairs is nothing but a swap shop up there. And I mean, you can find stuff dating back probably to the 50s and 60s at some point.
Yep.
I mean, we've seen some nitro motors up there. This one guy, when we walked by, had this table of nothing but nitro motors that probably there wasn't anything there after 1980. And, you know, there's some stores up there, too. So, you know, you can buy some, you know, if you go downstairs and you're walking around and you see something new or see something you like, normally you can pop back upstairs, find it, and buy it. So we got there and spent, about an hour or so. We went up there and looked around. And because sometimes, man, you can find some really good deals up there. I know last year I got my KA-8 up there for like, what, $100? Brand new, Andre, brand new in the box.
Nice.
So, you know, we were looking around, and we were on a mission for you too, looking around for some receivers and warbirds and stuff like that. But didn't pick anything up there this year.
No, not
upstairs. We looked around. Nothing really hit me. You know, too. I know Wayne was looking at a few RC cars up there.
Yeah.
But do you see anything up there? You were kind of
up in
At the swap shop.
Swap shop. No. No, there was nothing that.
Yeah.
I seen that.
A lot of old stuff.
No, yeah.
A lot of balsa stuff. So.
The stuff I wanted was downstairs.
Yeah. So. Exactly.
All the new toys.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So downstairs we went and finally dove in the doors there. And first, what we generally like to do is we start at one end. We kind of take a quick, brief walk through the whole thing. Because what happened the first year we were up there, we were like getting really in-depth with every booth and checking them out and talking with everybody. And before we knew it, the show was almost over and we barely got through the whole thing, and we were kind of rushing around. So we were like, okay, we're not doing that no more. So now we walk in the doors, kind of run through the whole show, and then we go, okay, now let's go back to this booth, or let's go back to this booth, or let's go see this again, or talk to this person, and it works out pretty good. But after we did kind of our quick walkthrough, though, and I know you're going to agree with me, but what was the big thing there at the show. What did we see a lot of?
Oh, man. Multicopters everywhere. Yes. I mean, everybody and their brother. I mean, you had a, you know, people that had stockpiles of the Proto X for $25.
Yep.
And then there's the one guy that had two of them that he was selling. One was $15,000 and the other one was $25,000.
Yes.
And it's like, all righty.
So. Yeah, it really did. I mean, it really ranged from just some cheap Chinese knockoff, you know, mini micro, you know, quadcopters, hexacopters, mm-hmm. UFOs, you name it, up to, like Wayne said, we were browsing through and came across. Now, Andre, I should have taken pictures of this.
Yeah, I know. I'm
and I have to ask Chad because Chad was trying to get some photos.
Oh, he
of
might
it.
Have.
I think it was a hex. Was it a hex or a quad? I don't even remember now.
It was either a hex or a nocto. It was.
Yeah. Andre, this thing looked like it was milled out of a solid block of aluminum. Yeah. I mean, literally, and I was like, that. I mean, it looked like you could drop it off of a 10-story building and you're not going to even damage it.
Wow.
And he had two of them there, and like Wayne said, I think one might have been a hex and the other was an octo or something. Mm. I mean, built, and had some real big, heavy-duty camera on it. And I was kind of joking around. I was like, man, that's probably like, you know, $5,000-$6,000. And about that time, he was talking to somebody else. He goes, oh, yeah, they were running a good deal. He says, this one's $25,000, and this one over here is only $15,000. And I was like, what?
What's the application? Is it like high-end aerial photography, like movie cinema style, or is it just, you know, your blinged out quadcopter?
I mean, it was I'd say a combination of both. Like if you just had unlimited money supply and you know said, hey, I got the world's only first billet aluminum, you know, octocopter, but I didn't see no advantage to it, and the thing's got to be heavy.
Oh, yeah. It has to be.
You should have seen this thing. It looked like an industrial piece of I don't know what.
Mm. Something out of Terminator.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good description. Something out of Terminator. And I don't know. I just kind of blew my mind a little bit.
It's funny because as we were walking with Chad and we went to lunch with him and we were talking about it. And it, you know, he even mentioned, he said, you know, just a few years ago, there were
nothing.
Practically no multicopters there.
No.
And now you couldn't walk 10 feet without another table with a bunch of them on it.
Right. And the crazy thing is, I remember 2 years ago, I think it was DJI had one of the first brushless gimbals up there that David was just drooling over this thing. And back then, I don't know whether they are $500-$600, I think, you know, when they first came out.
And Easily,
yes. Yeah, and that was just like the big thing. You know, 2 years ago was just a brushless gimbal. And now, you know, 2 years later, there was just quadcopters, octocopters, hex, and they were everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, high-end stuff. Like I said, the high-end, low. And the weird thing was, too, is, and I'm sure it's, you know, we have DJI to thank for this, but now almost every major manufacturer has their own or some sort of aerial platform type, mm-hmm. you know, has all the high-end bells and whistles, you know, GPS, altitude hold, return to home. And I just kind of have to laugh a little bit, Andre, because you go look around at these big booths and you see, you know, like a DJI Phantom or you see some other, you know, high-end AP platform, and it is put underneath the beginner section.
Yeah.
And I still find that just hard to believe.
Yeah.
And they're all like that.
Yep.
You know, well, anybody can fly this.
Anybody can fly it. You're just going to, you know, drop a couple $1,000s on it and go.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's a question. Were there any little nano blade FPV competitors?
I didn't see anything like real competitive to the like the nano FPV. There were some other companies there. They're kind of going off of the Dramata new FPV where they're still running off of the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So they have the small little really cheap generic cameras, you know, run it off the Wi-Fi, you either use your phone or a tablet or something. But
and a couple of them had the video was built right into the transmitter.
Yes, that was the other thing. Some of them, like Wayne said, you know, built right in. But I have mixed feelings with those because of the lag that they have on them for true FPV. Now, if you're just going maybe really slow, cruising around the house or summer, you got a pretty open yard, I think they work okay. I know here at Flight Test, they got a couple of the new Dramata FPV little quads in here. So I want to take that home, go test it out, check it out, and see what kind of lag we got or how it kind of compares to the Nano. Because I think now that, too, is out of the box, ready to fly. You know, you have the controller and the quad and the camera and everything, and I think it's right around $199.
Well, it's still interesting that we you haven't seen that competitor. So maybe later in the season, you know, we'll see something else, because I'll be watching for that end of the market myself.
Yeah, now I have to wonder, you know, again, the Nano Quad, I think it's kind of based on more – well, I can't say that because they are selling the goggles and everything. But still, you got to have some kind of your own transmitter. A lot of people that fly FPV, you know, use their own goggles, where some of these other ones, they're a little more pricey, that, you know, somebody right off the street could walk into a hobby shop and go, hey, I want to fly FPV, buy the product, pull it out, and have the controller, and use your phone or tablet or their own, you know, built-in transmitter with the screen and everything. So yeah, I think they're geared, you know, more towards people that have sick. Yeah, exactly. So it was definitely interesting, though.
I had to laugh, though, because, you know, you can see octocopters and stuff. I mean, these things are like 6 foot in diameter. They're huge. Then you have these ones that are barely the size of a quarter that you can put in the palm of your hand. I mean, every size in between. It's like, what do you want?
Right.
What's your budget?
Right. I'll tell you what, we'll just kind of run through some things and talk about them. But the first thing actually we seen and we talked with those guys was RC Logger. We walked right in the door there. Adam from RC Logger, great guy. We always chat with him, always good time to see him, talk to him, and fly with him. I flew with him a little bit on Rotor DR1. But they have a new kind of 350/450 size quad coming out. And it's really cool because it's just a different design. It looks kind of like a modular design. It's mm-hmm. it's just different than anything else that we've seen there at the show. And again, it has a lot of options.
Options are nice.
Yeah, you can change the landing gear around, Andre. You can buy it ready to fly, or you can buy just bare bones frame. It can be set up, you know, to have a full aerial platform, you know, to where you're ready to go. But it was a really, really interesting design. I thought it was pretty cool.
And the one landing gear is the type that pulls up as you're flying.
Yes, so that has the option, yes, of retractable landing gear.
Is that the orange and gray one?
Yeah, it's kind of like got a shell in the center. Okay. Yeah,
white props?
I believe so.
I'm looking over your photos that you posted there. Yeah, I like the look of that one. It had that neat looking remote.
No, that is the Hubson.
Okay.
Yes, and again, that's another new product that come out that Habaco's selling. It's a new Hubson quadcopter and AP platform. And again, same thing with a lot of these other ones we're going to talk about. It's got all the bells and whistles, GPS, return to home, altitude hold. Your standard features nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything is slowly becoming. Stuff that we drooled over years ago is now like, yeah, it's just, you know, it's like air conditioning in a car.
I don't know. I guess I'd have to try one. Again, a lot of these are coming with their own built-in screen on the controller. Like the Hubson had one. The Unique 500 that Horizon Hobby sells, theirs is built in. So I guess I have to try one to really, really say if I do or don't like it. Right now I'm kind of on the fence. I don't like it looking at them. I don't know why, but I, you know, haven't tried one, so I can't say for sure. I'll tell you what, let's move on. We went around the corner there, and the first thing we ran into was the Horizon booth. Now, if anybody that's ever been to the show, the Horizon puts on an unbelievable display up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they bring out everything and throw it out there. First thing, when we come around the corner, we seen the Whippet, which, you know,
so tiny.
Yes. Yeah. That was my first thought is when we actually seen it, how small it really was, Andre. Mm-hmm. And that was the one reason why I had Wayne actually pick it up and hold it so you could kind of see the size of it. And it is very light. So what did you think of it when you seen it?
Well, to me, it looks like a UMX. Like it's tiny. Like I'm looking at the actual photo of Wayne holding it, and like I'm looking at the rear spar going, wow, it's literally just a piece of material holding the tail together, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. The interesting thing is I did get to catch Matt Andron and talk to him a little bit. Well, first I was like, come on, Matt, when's this thing coming out? And hopefully we should be seeing this very soon. I believe it's on the boat and headed over, might even be a couple weeks. The interesting thing, and I know we talked about it before, was it's actually the same weight as the Ultra Micro Radium, but it's got a way bigger wing on it. And he said the glide ratio on it is a lot better than the Ultra Micro Radium. He says when you hand toss this thing up, it just stays up there for a long time. So that's a plus.
Is it a DLG or is it just like a traditional Chuck style glider?
It doesn't have the pin in the wings.
Right.
It's more of a, I would guess, a Chuck glider. Yeah. You can throw it like a DLG. You just kind of pinch it. Wow. What was the, was it an Aura?
The Lua.
Lua. That one is same thing where you pinch the wing and just chuck it up in the air.
Yeah. My guess was, Andre, that wing is so thin and everything to try to get a peg or a pin. I don't think it's going to stay in there. So the easiest thing is just pinch the edge of the wing. But even on the videos watching them chuck it up in the air, I couldn't believe the height they were getting out of it.
Oh, it'll be neat to see. And that just runs on a 1S, I assume?
Yep, yes. Just one 1S 150, I believe. Yeah.
So, wow.
The other thing they had there that Adam Drain kept, I forget the name of it. Probably should have wrote that down. What is it? The little PT-19?
Yeah.
Adam Drain was drooling over that. And he's like, man, I kept telling myself, I'm not going to buy any more micros. I'm not going to buy it. But he goes, man, I really like this thing. He was checking it out pretty hardcore. Mm-hmm. And it is really cool looking. It has a lot of details in it.
Another nice UMX AS3X plane, yeah?
Yes. And from there, we got to finally see the Rare Bear in person. Now, I know at first, and I'll be the first one to admit it, when it first came out and I seen it and seen the colors and everything, I was like, yuck. I do not like this thing. But I will say, seeing it in person, it is way, way better looking in person, Andre. Because I think you were kind of the same way when you first seen it.
The colors didn't really seem to do it, but I get that impression. So does it look like we had talked earlier about it? Does it look a little bit like a T-28 to you?
No, not at all. No. It's got this really kind of short coupled wing and this big fat body, and it's really cool looking actually when you see it in person. And the colors, after you see it, you know, the colors, it is really cool looking. I mean, it's really no other way to explain it. And I had a few other people I was talking to actually said the same thing. Hey, when you see it in person, it's a lot better. Interesting thing was is I caught Seth Arnold and, you know, talked to him a little bit about it. And, you know, he was really excited about it. And the thing that got me a little more interested in is he said he really spent a lot of time with this airplane, dialing it in and getting it to fly right. And he said, you know, you can fly it fast. You can fly it slow. You know, it has no bad tendencies. It tracks really well. And he seemed really proud of that, you know, that this airplane, that you can pull it out of the box, you know, put a four cell in it and buzz around over 100 miles an hour, or, you know, back it down and do some pattern flying with it, you know, no problem. So I don't know. I definitely would like to review one for sure, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. So what'd you think of it after seeing it in person, Wayne?
I thought it looked a lot better in person. The pictures just don't do it justice.
Yeah.
It pretty cool.
Yeah, it did.
Is that a belly lander?
Yes, belly lander only. It was pretty cool. It's got a little skid on the bottom, Andre, and then it actually has these handholds on it. So it looked like it's very comfortable to hand launch.
So it's got little dimples on the bottom, kind of like, what's got that? The Delta Ray.
Yeah, yeah, but they're actually, I think, even a little bigger. Like, you can actually get your hand kind of hand on them because, you know, it's a bigger, heavier airplane. So yeah. You got to really get a grip. Plus, it's powerful. So you got to, you know, really kind of hold it and get a good throw on it. Nice. You know, that's one thing he did, you know, talk about a little bit was it's got a lot of power. So, you know, when you're launching that thing, you want to go about 2/3 power, you know, and give it a good toss. He says, otherwise, you know, if you firewall the thing, it's going to kind of do like your EFX racer and just roll itself right into the ground, you know, because yep. the ailerons are so short on it for high speed, you know, you don't want a lot of throw on something like that.
And then that torque off the motor just death spirals it into
the
ground.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, the ailerons just can't hold it. So, interesting. And then actually, right below that, they had the new Park Zone P-47. And again, I talked to Matt a little bit about it. Now, kind of the good thing about it is it's exactly the same airframe as the old one. But same motor, ESC, everything, but... the flaps are already installed. The retracts, electric retracts, are already installed. It's got the new paint job, and then they put the AS3X receiver in it. Does have a new four-bladed kind of scale prop. Now, I guess that prop and also on the new P-51 that they Park Zone has, it's the same prop. So if anybody out there that has the old P-47, kind of like what I do, because I was on the fence, I was like, man, it – looks exactly like the old one, you know. Mine still flies great and everything, but it's, you know, it's got the four bladed prop, and of course it has the AS3X. So all you'd have to do is put the new prop on your old one. You know, you could upgrade and put the AS3X in it if you wanted to do that. But other than that, it's exactly the same. Also, it still comes with the original one came with a hard plastic belly skid on it. So if you're, you know, varying places of where you want to fly, that was one thing, Andre, I really liked about their P-47 was if you got a nice smooth runway, you know, you want to use a gear, no problem. And then if you switch or go somewhere else, keep that gear up. You know, the belly on the P-47 so big, they got a nice hard clear plastic on the whole bottom of the fuselage. You have no problem nice. Belly landing it. So
yeah, I had seen the pictures. Actually, I think it was Adam who sent the pictures to me, and it looked like a nice looking plane with that green paint job.
Right, right. Yeah, it's definitely looks better, I think, than the old one. It's just my opinion. So anybody out there that has the old one, you're not really losing out a whole lot, and you can upgrade a little bit. All right, let's see. Moving on. Let's move around the corner. We got to see, look, hold, touch, feel, taste the new, let me pull it up here, the Mach 25 FPV racer. That thing's interesting. I don't know how to take that thing at this point. I will say they had the body. They were pulling the body off and letting you check it out and everything. It is very well built. It looks tough. There's a lot of aluminum on there and the arms. So I don't know. I think the price is a little high right off the bat, but
I just saw that.
Yeah, $429 retail.
US.
But it's fully assembled. It's equipped with the safe. It has the three flight modes. Also has a canted motor mounts for, you know, the faster acceleration and the higher top speed. It does have some serious intense LEDs on it. They had them lit up. It's got that thick carbon fiber frame with aluminum frame members, self-tightening hubs. So, you know, it's tool-free prop replacements, which I think everybody seems to be going to that design. And it has a protective carbonate body design. Now, I don't know about the body design. I guess we'll wait and see once everybody gets one in their hands and starts flying it how that thing's going to hold up. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Right. If it hits the ground and flops over, that thing may disintegrate. But, you know, I guess if you look at the RC cars, though, yeah. You know, they're built out of the same material. Yeah. And those things, I've rolled cars at 60 miles an hour down the middle of the road and just roll after roll after roll. And they'll scratch up and beat up, but they're pretty tough. So it may hold up okay. It was interesting, though. Definitely interesting.
Kind of looks like a Star Wars pod racer or something like that.
You know, it does with the body on it. Now, when you pull the body off, it looked like pretty much any other, you know, heavy duty built quad racer. That was my thoughts on it. So, I don't know. The body just makes it look a little more interesting, mm-hmm. I guess. Let's see. What else they have, Wim? I know I'm missing a couple things here. We got to, you know, just look at some of the newer stuff, like the little Quantum they have, I believe. Is it the Quantum? I'm losing my mind. That has the little FPV aerial platform that they have, the little micro. Have you seen that, Andre? Runs off your phone. You fly it around like indoors. They had that there. So we got to see and touch that. Trying to think. They had the night vision air on display. They had a cool display for the night vision air.
Yes.
That thing had its own little booth, and it was set back in the dark, and then they had it all lit up. So that was pretty cool. Also, they had, which was impressive, I just liked looking at it. I would never buy one or fly one, but they had the quarter-scale Super Cub there on floats.
Yes.
That thing was crazy looking. Mm-hmm. I think that was about it for Horizon, especially for their new stuff. And then we ventured over there across to Habico, usually sets up pretty close to them. They were right across there. So we went over there and was walking around. Now, you're going to laugh at me, and I think I posted a picture on Instagram. The thing that caught my eye and I thought had the best display out of everything there was the Aquacraft Cajun Commander.
yeah, that thing rocked.
And you know, it's just an airboat that a new airboat that they're coming out with. But you know, it's got LED lights all over it. It's all done up in camouflage. It's got the fake, you know, like the 350 motor on the back and the cage and everything. It's really cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, for the display, they had, you know, like it was in a dock and it had weeds all around it and they had a fake dock onto it. And did I send you a picture of that, Andre?
You did. I had to look at it a few times because on my phone, I'm like, what am I looking at?
Yeah. I mean, in a picture, it is pretty much camouflaged. But looking at it, I think, man, that was probably the best display that we seen up there.
I think you could have fun with that, you know, out in the lake or something like that, you know?
Yeah, well, they had a video of it there, and it was they had it in the snow.
In the snow, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, they had it in the water, and the thing would get up and go. Had it on – I must have been kind of like some wet grass, I believe, going around. So it looks pretty versatile. You know, if you have one of those days where, you know, you really maybe can't go out and fly or whatever, you can just plop this thing outside, or if you got a nice lake or something. Yep. It was neat. And the LEDs, I mean, they went like all the way around the front. There was like 10 of them on there. So even at night, that thing might be pretty cool.
Neat.
The other thing, too, that like we talked about a little bit, the X4 Pro by Hubson. That's their AP platform quadcopter that's coming out. Looks like they have their own high-definition camera built right in on a three-axis gimbal. And again, all new, and it's one of those that has the controller, viewing screen, everything all built into one. And I was a little surprised by this one. I haven't heard about it or seen it or heard anybody talk about it or seen it on the web or anything. So I don't know if it's just really that new or if I'm blind and I missed it. But that was pretty cool. Let's see. They had their L-39 jet. It was kind of newer and redone, so that was on display. And, of course, there are a multitude of micro quads that they have there, the Proto X. They had the ominous drones there. They had all those, the FPV ones, the normal ones. They had a big, big display. And the cool thing about Habico is I think they were flying those things all day long. And matter of fact, we were walking through there, and somebody fired up the Proto X, I think it was. I don't know what happened, Andre. This thing fired up and shot. You know how fast that thing is, right?
Yeah.
that thing shot straight up in the air. I mean, just out of sight, went up into the rafters, crashed, and then come falling straight back down. And, I mean, Wayne walked right by it and fell right behind him. He didn't even see it.
Nope.
It was pretty
funny.
I heard
it go up, but I didn't hear it come down.
Yeah. So I think really that was kind of it for Habaco that we've seen any some of their big stuff there. Right beside them, Wayne, this is always our favorite booth that we go to, and we really drool and walk around and wish is the Skip Miller.
Skip Miller, yeah.
And they're known for their DLGs and their sailplanes. And I mean, their display, Andre, we took some pictures, but the pictures don't do it justice. No. They had a cross-country sailplane hanging up there that was probably 20 feet off the ground. I don't even know the wingspan on this thing. It had to be, I don't even know, what do you think, 20 feet? Right. Maybe not quite that, like 15?
Probably 12, 15, yeah.
It was enormous. Big, yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe it, Andre.
They had some really nice stuff there, though. I really liked their stuff.
Yeah, if you want some high-end, you know, cross-country sailplanes or even some discus hand launch. They do everything. They got the high-end stuff. And we've talked to Skip before, and, you know, that guy has multiple world championships. And he had the record for a while for distance in cross-country soaring. Now, I'm not sure if he still holds that or not, but interesting guy to talk to. Love talking to Skip. Go ahead.
When you say cross-country soaring, you're talking about a remote control or actually in the plane?
No, we're talking all remote control.
So what are you, in a follow-on vehicle or something?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Cross-country soaring is rather interesting, and it's not real big around here just because of our terrain and everything, but out west it's very popular, and it's actually really cool because what they do is they'll set up kind of like a route of how you have to fly, and you – you kind of wait and see. You know, you don't want to be the first person in the air. You know, you usually let a guy or two get up there and cruise around and see what's going on up there. And then, you know, you go ahead and launch, and you got to fly, you know, in the direction of you know, the coordinates or waypoints of where you're supposed to go. Well, then you got to follow in a chase plane. So a lot of them have like trucks or Jeeps with no tops, and they have these big chairs strapped in, and you follow your plane.
Oh, that would be so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's – go on YouTube and just watch some videos. It'll blow your mind.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be a riot, though. So I guess, yeah, it's very much like the – you know, sort of like the balloon, you know, events, I guess, where you've got to get to your checkpoints or your waypoints.
Right.
That's kind of neat.
But the stories behind it are crazy. It's not like you just fly from point to point to point. Like, you may go up and head to your next point and realize there's – no lift. So then you might turn around and come back to where there's lift and cruise around for a little while and then maybe head back out. I mean, there's so many little things you got to think about or things to do, you know, to keep that plane in the air, you know. It's interesting. I'd love to try it, but the planes are ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
They had I forget what it was. They had one on sale there. They were selling it, and they sold it. And what was the price tag? I think $2,500, I think it was, or something like that, they sold it there at the show. So high-end stuff. And then they had one of the new, I think it's an NXT Freak DLGs there. And they make some just phenomenal DLGs. And they said, hey, it's for sale, you know, if you're interested, you know. We walked around a little bit, and we came back, and we were eyeing it up again. And I had to ask. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking, because most of them are around, you know, $800-$900. This one was ready to go. Everything in it, servos, battery, you know, you take it home, bind it to your transmitter, and go. Do you know how much it was, Andre? Take a guess.
$2,000?
Nah, not quite. $1,400 bucks.
But that's American, not Canadian.
Yeah, this is
probably $2,000 to you.
But, you know, that was just a DLG. It wasn't even, you know, a big cross-country.
Yeah, but the thing didn't weigh anything, though.
No.
Man.
I think it was, right around 9 ounces, Andre, for a 48-inch wingspan airplane.
What is it made out of?
All carbon fiber.
Oh.
Complete nice. Carbon fiber.
So nice. Yeah.
I'd love to be able to watch the manufacture something like that.
Oh yeah,
the manual detail. That's all hand. Well, some of it's probably it's hand laid and then
yes, it is
baked in the compression oven, right? But still, it's the workmanship, the craftsmanship,
and that's why that's what the price comes from. Because you know this stuff is handmade, and you know, this isn't something you just go out and throw it together.
Right?
No, this is. This is some good stuff.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I have no problem, you know, if I obviously had the money to pay for buy one, because, you know, even David had a couple high-end ones, Andre, and to actually see them and see how they fly, and it's it really is amazing. It really is. But for now, you know, I'm going to spend the $70 and get the Whippet practice a little more with that. Yeah. But I have the Elf, and I love the Elf. It works great for my
That's something I'll look into in July when we're up together at Flight Fest. I'll maybe try one out, see what I think.
It's kind of addicting. Like, at first you're like, you know, you're just kind of tossing this thing in the air, and then it comes down. But then you start catching a few thermals with it, and you're thinking – It's a lot of strategy, you know, because you have no motor. So you got to think, you know, I can't get downwind too far. You know, I can't let this thing get away, or, you know, I got to try to keep it up. Or if you do get in a thermal, them things will go pretty quick. And then you're trying to, you know, stay in the lift. So there's a lot to it. But once you get that feeling and you get in some lift and you get your throws down, it's pretty addicting, as Wayne will tell you.
Yeah. Wayne loves it. That's the thing with, like, flying a Radian or something. You know, you can cheat because you got the motor on there.
Right.
You know, you can screw up. That's all right. Just punch the throttle, get back up there, and get back into it. I throw my Predator up there, and oh, no, it's you blow it, and you're going to be catching it and throwing it back up again. But I tell you what, though. But when you do catch that thermal and you start riding it up and it stays up and you actually start climbing in altitude, man, my belly starts tickling. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's very addicting. So maybe we better hold off on that, Andre, with you for a little while, you know.
Yeah, let my budget catch up again.
Yeah.
His wife's going to kill us.
Remind me, too, because I know you just got a Radian, so when we get through the show here, I want to get your thoughts on the Radian. Don't let me forget.
I won't.
All right, moving along here. Let's see what else we can talk about. Oh, the high-tech boys were always there. They're always fun. Sean Spiker and those guys were up there, and we were checking some stuff out. The biggest thing probably we notice, again, us being sailplane guys, they got a new sailplane out, and it's called the Heron. And it's a little bit smaller than, like, the original Cularis, but it was bigger than their other one called the, I think, Solaris. But a lot of the guys, we were talking and mingling and everything. It's like 94 inches, and everybody was kind of wondering why they just didn't go those few extra inches and make it a 100-incher.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Actually, we didn't get to talk to him and ask him about that. But the one thing I will say, it's kind of like built like the Cularis. It's very stout. It is pretty heavy. I think it was somewhere around 58 ounces, I think it was, Wayne. But the wing, I mean, is full of reinforcement. It had the fiberglass rod all through it. It had even on the flaps, the ailerons, I believe up through the fuselage. I mean, just looking at the plane, it's very well built. So if you want something that's going to hold together well, you know, you can probably fly that thing in any condition. That's going to be the glider for you. The only other thing I really noticed from them guys, they had the Ultra Fun Jet there, but now they got Smart. I have one of the originals, and it's gray with some orange stickers, and that thing is a nightmare to see sometimes. Mm-hmm. They had one there that was all white, kind of like the old original Fun Jet.
I see that. I'm looking at the photo now, actually. Yeah, that's a beautiful-looking thing.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. That sailplane, I think Multiplex makes some of the best-looking sailplanes, and that Elipor foam that they use, you can't beat that stuff. As you know, Andre, you have the Fun Cub.
Yep.
That foam is unbelievable. They didn't have the price. I don't think they had the price on the Heron up there, but I was a little curious.
Oh, yeah. I was just seeing I think it's receiver ready.
Yeah.
Is like $365.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Not too bad for foam.
Yeah.
But it's a big plane to cart around as well, so you've got to really want to be committed to that one. I assume things like the, because it's a T-style tail.
Yeah.
I hope to gosh that top section, the elevator comes off, because I could just see someone just ripping that right off, putting it into the back of the car or something.
Right. Hey, I just want to mention, too, while I'm digging through these pictures, the other really cool thing about the show, Andre, is usually like in the center, running all the way up a row. They do a static display of like sailplanes, warbirds, old time airplanes. Actually, they even had boats up there this year. Jets, turbine jets, Andre. And I'll have to send you some pictures. They had some stuff up there that I don't even know how to describe. The detail on this stuff
is ridiculous.
Like we were looking at like an A-10, F-4 Phantom. They had an FW-190 up there. The details on this, Andre, was like some of them even had like the indent, not the like where you do the little hot glue or something to put rivets on a plane. These had the indentations of the rivets, the little wiring going to the lights on the landing gear, the what else did they have? I mean,
everything.
Adam was posting some photos, yes. And it was just, the workmanship, the craftsmanship that some of these guys put into their work. I mean, this stuff will never fly. These are display pieces, right?
not always. A lot of these guys fly these things on a you know, monthly, weekly basis, you know, or they show up at some of the big events, you know, the jet events or the warbirds that they do down in Florida. I mean, they fly them.
Yeah, let's put it this way. You won't catch me flying any one of those things.
But it's really is a sight to see.
It is.
Just like the intricate details of the cockpits that they have in these things, the pilots, like everything. It's just crazy, the detail. And it's always cool to see, you know. I don't think there might be a few things that we've seen twice up there, but it seems like every year, you know, there's different stuff in there. And the cool thing is you go and vote. They have them in categories, and you can go right down there and then vote for your what you'd like to see. So, just made me think of it, the little Micro Horizon biplane, PT-17. I think I said 19, PT-17, me and my brain. Let's see, moving along here. What else? I'll tell you what we'll talk about, only because I probably have 900 pictures of it. We finally got to go around to the range video booth.
Oh, yes.
Now, they have a new FPV goggle system out called Headplay HD. I seen some videos, talked to some people. We even have a set here at Flight Test somewhere. I know they're here. I haven't seen them or tried them out yet, but I know we have a set. So I was really interested to go check them out, and I was telling Wayne about it, that he had to, you know, see him check them out. So we went over, and I don't even know how to describe this. When you first see it, first thing, and my thoughts were seeing the videos and everything, they're big.
Yep.
They look kind of big and bulky, and I would say the closest thing I could say is if anybody's seen the Oculus Rift that's out for the gaming for 3D games, it looks kind of similar to that. Same kind of head strap and everything. It's kind of big and boxy out front. But when you put that on your face and you throw that strap over your head,
comfortable.
They are comfortable.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable.
I'll be honest. I mean, you know, for one, with my eyes, I have to do the reading glass thing. So this thing's like staring into a big screen, high def television. I mean, it feels that big, but I could see so clearly. I mean, you know, but to me, you know, with the fat sharks and stuff, I have trouble with my eyes seeing the details in those. And they also feel awkward to me.
Right.
They feel heavy, and all the weight is on your eye sockets, you know, right around your eyes. Where this thing, that weight goes into the foam. It has that harness that goes around the back of your head. Man, once you put it on, it felt like nothing.
It
didn't feel like anything really.
Right.
It just felt like you were sitting there in front of a big screen.
Yeah.
And, I was just totally blown away. Chad always asks us every year when we go up. Chad always asks. He says, "Is there any one thing that just blows you away every time you see it? You know what you see here?" And my answer is always that no, I see a lot of things I like, but nothing really blows me out of the water. This thing did this year. This has actually, well, you know, so much that I actually pre-ordered.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. And And here's the thing, Andre. You know, I've been really on the fence of actually buying a set of Fat Sharks myself. Luckily, I'm very fortunate. I can use the ones here at Flight Test, mm-hmm. you know, if need be. And sometimes I do that. Because I have this thing for me spending $400 or $500 for actually what I'm getting. Because I don't use them a lot. Mm-hmm. I do use them here and there, but not a lot. I just, yeah. you know, I thought, well, I can buy two other planes for that and blah, blah, blah. But the what you're getting here and the view, now you ready for this, Andre? They're $250.
Wow, actually, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
What got me, and you took that one photo that you posted from inside the goggles, and what yes. got me was the resolution of that was just, I zoomed in and I could see details in that lady's face and that guy's face. You know, that's what I look for as a videographer, right? And
uh-huh.
I was impressed.
It was unreal. I mean, you can't really even describe it, Wayne, right? No. Until you actually have them on. But here was a funny thing, Wayne. I thought, okay, they had one set hooked up to an Inspire, mm-hmm. and then they had another set hooked up to a cheap security camera. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we went from the Inspire over to the security camera. Now, obviously, you didn't have that HD detail.
One was
detail,
HD, and the other one was standard.
But still, the standard yeah. just completely blew me away. Yes. It was unreal. Yeah. And it comes with two different lenses in it. You know, you can change them out or you know, however you want. It has the integrated 5.8 receiver in it.
Nice.
Looks like that you're going to be able to have some options for batteries. It does come with its own battery, but Chad and I, we were talking there. It looks like, you know, you can put whatever plug you want on there and put whatever battery you want on there. So lots of, you know, contrast and color and 32 channel. I mean, it's a whole system built ready to go.
That is nice.
And that was probably our biggest surprise and thing that we've seen at the show, amongst all of us, Chad and Adam and all of us. So we were really.
No, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I've got my Fat Sharks teleporter set, and that was, you know, basic entry goggles. But I haven't flown enough FPV for me to say, okay, I'm ready to take the next step and upgrade to a newer set of goggles. But who knows? If I do more flying this summer FPV, I'll probably look into it, because I have the same thing where I'm just lacking that detail that I want to see while I'm flying.
Right. And even the teleporter, what are the teleporters run price-wise? I don't even know.
I think the kit was like, well, this was the full kit with the transmitter and everything. I think it was
okay.
About $300, right?
No kidding. Wow.
But that was with the Fat Shark transmitter and everything. That was, you know, so that's your entry kit to get going. But now you like, you can buy a camera and transmitter set for $30.
Right. So. Oh, hey, I know what I forgot. We were talking about high tech. How did I forget this? I skipped right over it. Also, High Tech has come out with their brand new, again, AP platform quadcopter, mm-hmm. and it's called the QCOP 450. Same thing. It's a 450 size quadcopter with all the bells and whistles. Has its own transmitter, own high definition camera, which we found out High Tech's kind of making their own little small high definition cameras that they're selling, you know, to individually, so you could buy them and put them on whatever you want. GPS, return to home, you know, all the bells and whistles like everybody else. But that they're throwing themselves in the market too. Same price range. I think it was $699 or something like that. So they're all relatively seem to be the same. I don't know how you would really even pick and choose. Maybe if your local hobby shop carries parts, I don't know. You know, that I haven't seen anything where one's better than the other or this one does that. They all seem to be pretty close in features. One might have a few more, one might have a few or whatever. But I, you know. Let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, I'll tell you something that Fred would be really interested in. We were walking by the hacker booth. And we looked over,
yes.
and at first,
oh, yeah.
this is crazy. I first kind of glanced over, and I seen this chute kind of hanging, like a, I don't know if it's maybe quarter scale chute hanging up. I was like, ooh, that's kind of weird. And looked over, and there's a little guy strapped on the bottom of it, you know, and here it was a paramotor glider all set up. And apparently, I guess they're going to start selling these. I think they even might be available in Europe right now. I'm not positive, but it looks like they're going to sell them over here, obviously, if they had them on display. But it's rather large. I mean, that chute was big. But but looking at the video, that thing looked like fun.
Oh, yeah.
I sent him a video. There was one guy flying one inside of a gym. I don't know if it was the same one, but, it, you know, small chute, and it was going on, doing little rotations throughout the gym. So I linked him a video on Facebook. And he came back and asked his wife for one.
Oh, did he really? Oh, that's funny. Yeah. So, yeah, I was actually pretty impressed by that. I don't know what the price would be on something like that, but it was pretty cool.
How does it turn?
I guess it must have the guide wires must come down to they didn't have, like, I don't think a whole one on display. Like, they had the chutes up, and then they had, like, the little basket thing that you sit in, like, the, you know, it was a tricycle with the fan on the back. Oh, Wayne's breaking things over there. And I'm guessing, you know, that's usually, you know, you up and down is from the motor, and then left and right is on the cords, just like a normal parachute. So I don't know. They must be linked to servos or something, I would take it. And
actuate the guy's arms.
Yeah, there you go. It was cool, though. It was rather interesting. Let's see. I think that's pretty much about it. The only other thing I was going to throw out there for you, Andre, is they did have the – well, there's a couple things, actually. Diamond Hobby had a big – FMS display there.
Oh, teasing me with those photos.
Yeah, and one thing about FMS, I have to give it to them. I think price and quality and what you get, they're one of the best companies out there for warbirds. And they had a lot of them on display, but they had two of their new 980 millimeter series out there, and the P-47 was one, which has been out for a little while, but they had the P-40 there, Andre.
Breaking my heart.
Yes. Let me just tell you again, in person, that P-40 was beautiful.
I'm looking at the photos you sent me.
Yeah. Really nice looking. And it's really kind of the perfect size, at least for me. You know, it's not overly big like their bigger 14. Warbirds that they have. Yeah, their 1700s and their 1400s. Because they can get a little awkward. I had a couple of their 1400s, and again, I get maybe one plane in the car, and then I'm kind of hosed, where, you know, you get the 980, you can take some more stuff with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, good looking.
I want a supplier in Canada. Why is it so hard for them to know that, not have one? Ugh.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're not up there anywhere. Now, the only other thing really at Diamond Hobby that at the very end I ended up walking out the door with is they had the I don't know if I even know the name of it. It's a Rock Hobby glider, and I forget the name of it.
I don't know the name of it.
I forget, too. Anyway, they have, and we've looked at it the last year or so. It's kind of a full house, 86-inch wingspan glider. You know, it's got the ailerons and the flaps, and it's big and heavy duty. And since I finally sold my Radiant Pro, I thought I'd give this a whirl. And here was the thing. It was only $160, you know, for that big, giant glider. So I'm going to give it a whirl and see what happens. I'm going to make it full house and put the camera and reflex and the crow on it and set it up, and I'm going to see what it's going to do. So I'm kind of excited about it.
86.6 inches. I'm looking at the link you sent me. Yeah. The V-tail glider, plug and play. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big plane. And wow.
I guess I didn't really think about it till actually I got it home and I was like, it's not going to fit in the car. I'm going to have to take those wings off every time. So, but that's all right.
You're right back to your Radiant Pro problem.
Yeah, kind of. I think it might be a little bit easier. I was looking at it the other day and, you know, pulled the wings out and everything. And it's, you know, flies off of a 2200 3-cell. So.
Oh, that does look nice.
Yeah.
It does look nice.
What's it? Does it actually have a name? You looking
it's
at?
It's called, hold on, yeah, I had the link. It's called the Rocco Hobby V-tail glider.
Yeah, V-tail, yeah. I was close.
Rock Hobby, yeah.
Really cool looking. Last year, I think Wayne and I, we were checking out, reading the forums about it, and everybody seems pretty happy with it. So, other than that, do you think of anything else, Wayne? I'm glancing through some of these other pictures that we missed or something you wanted to talk about.
No, nothing I can think
of. I think we hit most everything. Habaco did have their P-47, their new P-47, out on display. The cool thing about that is you don't see a lot of it. It's the old-style Razorback. It's a giant scale, 50 to 61 cc EP or electric power ARF. Really cool. That was about the only other thing I'm looking at I can think of here. Any questions, Andre, or anything that you wanted to mention or we missed or anything that you could think of? We'll move on.
I don't think so. I'm just looking through the notes that that you had forwarded while you were at the show. I don't see anything, so I think we're good to go. But sounds like something I'm going to have to try and go and see one of these big shows, because I don't have an opportunity to do swap meets around here. We've never had one, so it'd be nice to just look around and see what they are.
It's interesting because all of us, it was Adam and Chad was up there and Mike was with us, and we're all walking around, and it's like, all we wanted to do is once we leave here, is go home and fly. It just really, really amps you up and gets you all excited. It's pretty crazy.
Well, we're finally getting into the weather.
Right.
Saturday, we got up flying on Sunday for a couple hours, which was good.
Yeah, Sunday was great. We finally got out, which, you know what? Let's touch base with that a little bit. Let's talk about a little flying. How about that? We're going to get into that. We got out Sunday. I'll tell you what. First of all, let's go with you, Andre. You finally broke down, bought a Radian.
Yes, I got my
Radian. I'm just curious. I mean, I know I talk a lot of sailplane stuff and everything. So, but what was your decision on going for a Radian? I mean, what you know?
Oh, come on! It's all your fault from last year.
So that really did do it for you, really?
Oh, are you kidding me? That's the wonderful thing about RC flying. There are so many different things. And last year when I was at Flight Fest, you asked me when we were coming up, what do you want to try? And I said, well, I've never flown a glider. Uh-huh. So, you stuck it in my hands. We put it up in the air. And that ability to almost shut everything down and just cruise. You know, mm-hmm. there's one thing when you're flying a fast plane or doing an aerobatic plane and it's just about everything. And then flying the Radian is all about just sensing what the aircraft is doing and just slowing everything down. And that can be a beautiful thing,
Right, right.
So for September, I got my little UMX one, which is fun. And, uh-huh. you just toss it and go. But there's something about having that big, big, big Radian. And like I said last time, I used to take the FPV gear off the Bixler too and just toss that up there in the air and do it. And fly around, and that is equally as good, but it's one of those things where if you want a plane that really breaks down really nicely, the Radian with the wing, the detachable wing, and no control surfaces on it is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like last week there, I put a note out to the group because we were talking about something. I said I'm looking for a used Radian, and I had two offers come in, one for a pro and one for just a stock Radian. So I went with that. So Sunday I put it up. For the very first time, and did the 3S1000 battery, pushed uh-huh. it all the way to the back. It was tail heavy on launch. Well, actually, I didn't do anything you told me to do, right, Chris? That whole chuck test.
Yeah,
forget
yep.
it. I chucked it, looked at it, said ah, and fired it up, and off she went.
That's funny.
But it was tail heavy, uh-huh. and I basically almost I looped it.
Oh,
the first shot. I was like, wow, cool. Not cool. Too much throw. Anyhow, I got it up in the air and was able to expect it. And on a 1000, you'll do about 4 minutes of motor time in the winds I was dealing with. I think in my area, it's going to be more about sailing with the wind uh-huh. than actually catching thermals. So uh-huh. battery time will be important. But, oh, gosh, we got it up in the air and, everybody's flying around. So I brought it down. And then once everybody left, I threw it up in the air again. And on the second pack, I think I was in the air for about 20, maybe 30 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it was fun. And I just, just hanging out. I'd say 300 feet, I guess. I mean, it wasn't crazy or nothing because obviously I don't have the I'm only running that that diversity DMSX receiver. So I'll put the longer whip in one once I order that. So.
Right. I think you'll be surprised in the summer. I've seen where you fly and everything, and you'll be surprised at the thermals that you'll probably pick up around there.
Yeah, I know we've done it with the Bixler and even the little UMX Radiant, especially over the parking lot.
Exactly.
You know, and it just picks that up and goes up. So it'll get there. I'll probably work on the markings a little bit more for my, you know, it's got some nice stripes on the bottom. Steven, who I bought the airplane from, a really nice guy, said he flew it about 10 times and just decided that, you know, it's not something they do with the group. Where I fly, a lot of the guys will go soaring. They wanna go fast. So
right,
and I get that. But now I've got this bird to bring with me to Flight Fest, so we can, you know, go along. And it sounds like a good number of people are going to be gliding this year. So
yeah.
our ability to, you know, get away from all the low traffic and get up high we're gonna have traffic problems up high now too.
yeah, that's fine. You know, maybe we'll have to like get a glider line there at the very end of the field or something. We can do that.
Yeah, just everybody just kind of park, and you know, maybe that eagle will come back and say, hey,
yeah,
get out of my airspace.
Right. So everything's good. You like it then? And
oh, yeah. Good. I was super happy to get it up, and I landed it, and you know, I came back, and it's, you know, it's one of those things, you land it and you're thoroughly relaxed after flying something like that, I find. So
right.
And it was good because my other aircraft didn't do so well. So should we get into that whole debacle?
Go ahead. Might as well throw it out there.
I went to, you know, it's finally a decent day. Sunday was finally a really nice day to go flying. So I decided to take the EFX out for finally a spring flight, and it lasted all of 10 seconds. bad launch on my part. I think I did my underhand toss, but I had firewalled the power, I think, and it just torque rolled right in.
And
I actually cracked the wing.
Oh, really? You mean at the bottom there where, like, bolts
right
on?
Right in the middle. Yeah, uh-huh. Right in the middle where the bolt's in. And what I've read is I'd want to over-tighten the bolts.
Uh-huh.
And that basically stress-cracked everything right up. So the wing is back together, re-epoxied it. But then I discovered I'd done the bearing in on the motor. So I'm in the middle right now looking at motor specs. Of course, you know, with Hobby King, unfortunately, right. The stock motor is not available. So I'm kind of trying to figure something out as close spec. It's what is that one? 2836, 2300. So,
huh? So it must have augured in pretty good then if you tossed a bearing, huh?
Well, I mean, you look at a couple other my failed attempts at throwing it, right? There's been a few. So that poor motor, So when I gotten some dirt in it, right? So I'm like, okay, I'll take it apart. And as soon as I looked at the main bearing, had just been shattered. There were little tiny ball bearings everywhere. So I tried to replace the bearing, and unfortunately, like the tests I did earlier today, it just got hot right away. So I'm like, nope, this thing is done. So I may throw it into something else that I don't really care about, but I don't want this. I don't want the motor burning up while it's in the plane, obviously.
Right.
So that's unfortunate, but I'll do a quick Hobby King order for once I decide what motors. I've been checking out the forums and asking questions, and it's one of those things where, you know, you ask one question, you get, you know, 15 million pieces of advice. So it's almost – it is overwhelming, you know, and it's like, no, I want to get something that's not going to overload the ESC. I want to get something similar. Like I said, if I could buy the stock motor again, I'd just throw it in there and go.
Right. And then look for some bearings later and then have a spare.
Well, this is it. Yeah, just see what I can do about repairing the other one. So, because that bearing was in there pretty hard. I had to use a Dremel tool to extract the outer race. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So whatever happened, it burnt in pretty nicely. So we'll see. But it's one of those things where I don't want to take too much time because I actually want to get flying this airplane. Like I've flown it. I've had a couple successful flights with it and enjoyed it. So now it's just this frustration of what's going on and backtracking. So it happens. It's called flying for a reason. Yeah.
So really you got to just work on and get that throttle dialed for the hand launch, and then you should be fine.
Yeah, because right? I mean, I've had a couple of really successful throws with the thing. So I guess it's just one of those things where I wasn't thinking my steps through and just kind of just tried to toss it, you know, and it didn't go anywhere.
Right.
So everybody's like standing there going, what happened? I said, don't ask. And the plane is just covered in mud. And I'm like, oh, so, but it takes away some of that stress now, right? It's, it's not a perfectly beautiful looking airplane anymore now.
Right.
It's got some character.
Yeah.
So, What else? Oh, well, I finally had some really good flights with that little UMXP-40.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you were working on that for a little while.
Yeah. Okay, so I can get what's really interesting right now, and I don't know if it's because my battery packs are going down or maybe they've aged, but it doesn't like those Turner G1Ss.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yep. Them batteries weren't ever very good for some weird reason.
Well, but my UMX is, the Radiant's fine with it. My little micro Tiger Moth are fine with it. But yep. For one reason or another, the P40 just doesn't want to fly in them. It gives like the battery warning. Yep. And I go and I stick them on the charger and it says, no, it's at, 160 milliamps, ready to go.
Yeah.
So I've been using the E-Flight, the factory ones, and I'll get about 4 minutes and I'm bombing it away. And we had some pretty good wind in the afternoon on Sunday.
Huh.
And I'm bombing away doing rolls and stuff.
Now, you haven't set it up to where you can turn the AS3X off yet?
Nope. So when you try and do like a vertical climb and stall, the AS3X goes bananas.
Huh. Wow.
It's kind of fun. So it's very much like one of the comments there that we had gotten from one of the earlier podcasts. If you don't have enough speed when you're going through a loop, the S3X will kick in and try and straighten and right in the airplane because it detects a stall kind of thing. But I can sit there and I'll flick over to higher rates and I can barrel roll this thing like continuously, spinning it around on an axis. So, So I'm having fun with it now.
Good.
So it is nice to put in, just stick it in the box and bring it to the field and have it ready to go.
Right. Awesome. All right, anything else, or I will jump back to the Radian here real quick.
Oh, yeah, go back to the Radian.
All right. Well, one reason why I was bringing the Radian up was, as everybody probably remembers, I talked about I got a new DX9, and Horizon now has a variometer out that does the audible tone. So I was all excited. Bought a couple of those, put one in the Radian. I have one going in the Mystique for later on. So finally, we got a little bit of decent weather where we're 900 mile an hour winds and everything else. So we took it out Sunday and did some testing with it. Wayne brought his Radian out and we set it up and away we went. And a couple things. I do like it. It works very well. I think next time I go out, though, it's very noisy.
Yeah.
And what I ended up doing, Andre, is I set it up when you go into the telemetry, you can actually turn it on and off. So I put it on a switch. So if I'm taking off, I turn it off. Otherwise, the thing will beep and beep and beep till you get the altitude. And the other bad thing was when you were done and you were ready to come down, well, it thinks you're in sync, and it just beeps and beeps. Yeah. So I finally put it on a switch, so I turn it off when I climb, and then when I'm ready to come down, I turn it off so I don't have any noise. Played around with the settings. You can individually set your whether you're climbing or descending for feet per second. I played around with it. It's kind of tough. It was pretty windy that day, so it really was either climbing or sinking. So I'll probably wait till we get a nice, smooth, calm day to see what it really does. Now, obviously, when it's just cruising and it's in glide mode, it was really quiet. I might try it with headphones. The DX9's got a port now. You can plug headphones into it. That way Wayne doesn't have to listen to it. Beep, 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 beep. But I raised I went from like 3 seconds a minute for sinking up to like 3.8 or 3.9 seconds, and that did seem to quiet it down a little bit. But overall, I was really happy with it. I mean, some of it, if it was climbing really quick, you could still see it. You could tell by looking at it that you were in some kind of lift. But the real subtle lift, it was really helpful. Like I could tell real quick, it instantly, with the snap of a finger, it'll let you know, hey, you caught a little bit of lift. Like you might be coming around and just catch a corner of a thermal or something, and that thing will, you know, to where you didn't quite see it with your eyes or realize it, and initially you can go, oh, hey, there might be something there. I'm circling back around and get into something where before you were just missing it, unless you've seen the tall tail signs of the, you know, the tail lifting up or the wing or something like that. So I was really happy. Well, I mean, you seen it. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. I like the fact that you could actually adjust it.
Right.
So you did tone it down. So
right.
You can have it as sensitive
yep.
or as quiet as you want it to be. So,
yeah.
And of course the ability to turn it
off. Yeah. That was the big thing.
Yeah, I like that setup.
Cause it was really nice. Yeah. At first I was like, I don't know if I can handle this. It was annoying me. And then I got looking. I'm like, oh, I can put it on a switch. Mm-hmm. That is nice.
Yep.
So something, you know, maybe the 9X stuff, we'll get some variometer for you there, Andre.
Yeah, that'd be neat to get some telemetry back. And so does that feed back more than just your elevation now, or do you have like full telemetry with the aircraft?
Yeah, it's full telemetry. I have battery voltage, altitude, or altimeter, so which is cool because we caught a couple pretty good ones there. Man, I don't even know how fast we were climbing, but I know at one point I think I was around 600. We climbed up and leveled off at 600 because Wayne says how high are. I said we're about 600, and we went from 600 to 900 within seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's one thing you'll learn, Andre. I know I keep telling you, but you get a good thermal, that thing will spec out so quick. The next thing you know, you can barely see it, and you're freaking out trying, yeah. How am I going to get this thing down without ripping the wings off of it?
Yeah. I posted on the flight test forum about my Radian, and someone came back and said, you may want to put your name and number on that thing just in case. Yeah. And there's a story about a guy losing – they were having a New Year's fly-off somewhere, and, you know, some farmer found a plane and, you know, made the phone call a couple weekends ago kind of thing, you know, found your Radian. So,
yeah, just drop the nose and let it spiral. Let it bring it back down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but I am going to upgrade the receiver. Chris and I had a pretty good chat about that one. You know, look for something with a long whip antenna. So, and it's not really the range thing. It's just if there's any kind of interference in the area too. So
yeah, you definitely want a good long range receiver on that. Because like I said, if you're up, you know, 1,200 feet and that thing's specced out, and that's just altitude. You know, who knows how far you are. You don't want any kind of glitch because it's gone.
No, no.
So
well, that's pretty neat about the telemetry. That's something to if I have my, I'm gonna have to keep my eyes out to see what kind of, you know, two-way system I could look into. I guess that's the real nice thing about all these, you know, these more recent radios is just everything is, it's like the multi-rotors now. Everything is, you know, standard features is telemetry, you know.
Right
So
right.
I know the guys have been chatting up the Gropners, and you know, even the basic four channel radios got, you know, telemetry back and forth. You know, it's just a beautiful thing to be able to see all that stuff and be able to add those options.
Right. And one thing I will say, I don't know if it's silly or whatever, but I love my DX9 because it talks to me. I love that. I love it. And I'll give you an example. Doing a little testing. We finally took the Night Vision Air out. We got a few flights on that, but we're still working with that, still testing that out. But we also brought out the Gropner Hot Fan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you know what? I'll be honest. It was around here and hanging around the shop for quite a while, and then Flight Test did a little review on it, flew it around, and I was like, I didn't know how to take it. I was like, yeah, it's probably going to be okay. You know what I mean? It's got this big ducted fan thing that flips out.
Big. That thing is tiny.
It is kind of tiny. Hanging up in here, it did look big, but right. When we got it out there, it's got a pretty good wingspan. I think it's a 60-some inch wingspan.
But the motor looks real small compared to the rest of the thing.
Yeah. You know, and I was setting it up at the house, and I was laughing at it, you know, because I'd hit the switch, and this fan flips out. You know, even my son, he's like, that's just weird, Dad. It doesn't look right. And I, you know, I didn't think it would have that much power, but we got it out to the field, and again, that's why I had to laugh with my DX9. Here was the hard thing, Andre. You put the fan on a channel, and you hit it, and it actually pops out. Then you have to hit the throttle, and we would fly up to altitude, And then when you want to glide around, you turn you throttle down and then hit your switch and to retract the fan back in the thing. Now you had to remember I had to keep my finger on that switch because I'd get down, you know, around 10, 12 feet.
No power.
Yeah. Go, hit the throttle and nothing. You're like, oh, I gotta put the fan out, you know.
So can you actually run the fan up when it's inside?
You can. Yes. You can, because trust me, I did it 3 or 4 times. Like, what happened? Oh wait, I gotta, you know. But the funny thing was on the DX9 on my switch, I finally made the voice command. It would say motor on, motor off, motor on, motor off. So that way I knew if the fan was out or if the fan was in.
Nice.
Oh, it was funny. But
you probably could program something where you couldn't run the throttle. Well, I don't know if you do any damage to the plane.
No, I don't think you can really damage it. I
wonder if you could toggle it so when it throttle. Yeah. You know, when you throttle up, it would actually open and engage the pod.
You could mix the throttle in with that channel, sure, and put it even put on a curve or something.
A little delay or something, but who knows what could happen? You know, if you're throttling up and down madly trying to get the plane to control.
It was, but I have to say, Wayne, I want to get your opinion of it too. Is you know, the first flight went okay, and then we flew it again, then we flew it again, and I'm telling you, by the end of the day, I was really liking that thing. It was fun.
Yeah.
And Wayne, I'm telling you what, Wayne got this thing to glide like nobody's business. I don't know how he did it, but you were up there for 2-3 minutes on its own.
Flying. It flies a lot like my Predator does.
Yeah.
Once you shut the engine off, man, that thing just glides. It's the same thing where you have to keep it going.
Right.
You keep the forward momentum if you want to stay in the air. It'd catch a thermal, and it would stay up.
Yeah. Yeah, and not only did it glide nice, it penetrated really well.
Yeah.
We had a pretty windy day,
penetrated
great. So then we thought, okay, well, we're going to really kind of put it through the test. We took it up to about 300 or 400 feet, put it in a nice dive, I mean straight down to the ground, probably over 100 miles an hour. No problems, no flutter. We didn't even see the wings flexing hardly. The controls worked great.
That real cool whistle as it went by.
Yeah.
You had a couple of good dives there.
Yeah. Yeah. I could bring it straight down, level it off, and go right into a loop. Mm-hmm. No problem. I did get really close to the ground one time.
Yeah. He kind of stood up on his tippy toes. I don't know if he realized he did that, but it was funny watching him.
Oh, man. I mean, I come out of a dive and went into a loop, Andre, and that thing was coming around. I'm pulling on that elevator stick as hard as I could, and I think I was within about 3 feet or less.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. So, like I said, I got to say, if anybody's looking for a little bit of fun in a glider, the Groppner Hot Fan was fun. We had a good time with it. I don't think it's real expensive. So,
well, now I guess, would you run a comparison between your new V-tail and that one, since they're both V-tail tails on them?
Yeah, I probably will once I get the other one together. But I honestly, Andre, the big rock hobby glider, I think it's more set up as a pure sailplane. It's got the big longer, it looks, you know, where the hot fan's kind of
a warm liner.
More warm liner, but it surprised us on its gliding ability. Actually, it did pretty well, and again, we're always trying to look for something that flies good in the wind around here too, and that thing did really well. Like I said, penetrated really good into the wind. The only thing we noticed with it, though, like Wayne was mentioning, is if it gets slow, forget it. There is no authority. There's no nothing. You got to keep the airspeed up on it.
It just sort of flops out of the sky.
Yes, absolutely. And there was a couple times, dummy me, I thought, I'm just going to catch this thing, and there was no way. That thing comes in pretty hot.
Was funny because you tried it a few times and didn't come in, and I see him take his hand off the radio, and you see that hand coming out like he's going to catch it, and all of a sudden you see him diving out of the way.
Yeah.
It's like, you ain't catching that.
There ain't no way I'm catching
that. Knock you over.
And the sad thing was I think I did try it 3 times. I'm like, well, it didn't work the first time. Let's try it 2 more times. And there was no way.
Does that one have flaps or is it just ailerons?
Just ailerons. Yeah.
Oh, wow, ailerons and the V-tail. Interesting.
Yeah. So it was fun. I don't know who the original maker is. There's a couple companies. I think even Peter mentioned it that actually make that. I know. I think ST Models might make it. And there's I think Tower Hobby sells it. But still, it was fun. We had a lot of fun with that and enjoyed it. So. That was the Hot Fan, H-O-T-T, Hot Fan.
Well, I'm glad you got your hands on that one. And then I look forward to you guys doing your comparison for the Night Vision Air and the Sukhoi.
Yeah, we got – I think I ran three batteries through it. We're still playing around with it a little bit. It was pretty windy that day, and with that big fat wing on the Night Vision Air, it was getting tossed around a lot, and I was having a few little issues with it. So we're going to have to get it out on a nice calm day and get it all trimmed out and everything's perfect and see how it goes. But I don't know, you know, initial reports, it didn't seem a lot different than the Sukhoi, Andre. I don't think, you know, that one's better than the other or anything. They felt pretty similar. Maybe just a little bit slower in some of the maneuvers. But like I say, we're just started testing it. So, we'll get some more testing in before we really do a full review on it.
I'm just waiting for our landing pad to, the track to dry out and, then the Sukhoi can come back out for me so I can start learning to do a little bit more 3D maneuvers. Cause I tore up my poor T28 there the other weekend, trying to take off on the muddy track.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, the only other thing I was going to talk about real quick, so we got a little bit of time here. I know we're kind of running long. You guys probably be mad at me, but, I don't know if you've seen, Wayne and Andre, I've read about it, watched a lot of videos on it. And I follow Urban Drones on, Twitter. Is they're coming out with, it's called the Splash Drone. Have you guys seen it or anything?
Just a couple little videos.
Have you seen it, Andre, at all?
I might have. Hold on here.
All right.
Googling.
All right.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've seen this before. You know, a waterproof beach drone.
Yes. Now, I guess the only really reason it intrigues me is because, you know, I'm always looking to fly in that nasty weather or that snowstorm. Or I've told Wayne I'd love to take the Beaver out in like a torrential downpour, you know, if we had it all waterproofed. And watching the videos of these guys just like tossing it out of the boat, because obviously it floats. It's completely waterproof, has a waterproof gimbal on it, and of course you run a GoPro on it. But the footage, you know, where they toss it out on the boat and you see the camera actually underwater, you know, looking around, and then the thing just all of a sudden takes off, flies all around, lands back into the water. It just intrigues me. And I think it's kind of just a cool, neat concept. You know, it's...
So, okay, devil's advocate here. How does the motor, how are they dealing with the salt water? Fresh water is one thing. Salt water is a whole other beast.
I would say if you flew it in the salt water, you know, once you were done, you just have to really rinse it out.
Just to coat the cans.
Just like our diving equipment. You know, we dive in the ocean all the time. As soon as you get back to where you're at or whatever, you take a freshwater garden hose and just rinse, you know, hose everything, rinse it real good, and generally you don't have any problems.
Okay. Cool.
Good question, though. That's a really good question. I don't know for sure. I'm just guessing. So if you guys out there, Google Splash Drone. It's they had a Kickstarter for it. I know it's over now, but it's interesting. And the only other video I thought was great, and I would love to try this, is it was a torrential downpour. I mean, it was raining so hard. The guy went out off his porch, set it down, and took off and was flying out in the torrential rainstorm with it, capturing some video. And I just thought, oh, man, that would be fun.
That would be neat, yeah.
So other than that, I think we're going to wrap things up here. We've been rattling on here for about an hour and 20 minutes. But we got a lot of stuff coming up here for the next couple podcasts, a lot of stuff to review. Still got the Night Vision Air, hoping to get our hands on the Ominous FPV drone. We can maybe we'll do a little comparison with that to the Nano QX FPV too. You know, we can fly those around the yard. So we got some reviews coming up, tons and tons of crash stories. So again, let me know. We could sit down again and do another hour, hour and a half crash stories and discuss them if you guys want. If you like that, no problem. Or we can just throw, you know, five or six out next time. Let me know. And again, keep sending them in. I love them. I get all excited, you know, and I get home and I got, you know, five or six new crash stories to read and go through. So other than that, I think we're out of here for another week or so, and we'll be back with some entertainment.
All right.
All right. Andre, guys, thank you for joining us again.
No problem. My pleasure. Yeah.
And I'm sure I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. I got to go and order a motor.
Oh, yeah. You do that and get that thing back in the air.
That's right.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Follow us on Instagram at FT After Hours. We should be posting some pictures, quite a few coming up here since we got some stuff to review and we've actually got to go out and go flying.
The weather's actually getting nice. So Friday night's looking good.
Yep.
So.
Friday's night's looking good. So we'll get back after it. Maybe we'll even have the night vision out there at night. Get some pictures of that. Keep sending your crash stories in at chris@flighttest.com, and I'm sure we'll read it on air.
Yep.
All right, we're out of here finally. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Later, guys.
Bye.
Ciao.